Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. It's my pleasure. My website is www.jbsba.com. And when you get there, don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter whenever you get a minute. And if I think you'll like it. It comes on Sunday, every Sunday afternoon. We're now starting our sixth year of that publication. We haven't missed an edition in 6 years in 5 years, I should say. And it comes on Sunday afternoon to get you ready for the week ahead. I'm excited about getting Steve Forbes back on the show, folks. Steve's been a good friend of mine for a number of years, and you know him very well. And whether you know it or not, he's a good friend of yours, because I don't know anybody in the marketplace who is as proud of what you do as a small business owner as Steve Forbes is. You know him as a lot of different things, editor-in-chief of Forbes Magazine, president and CEO of the Forbes organization. He's a former presidential candidate, ran for president in a couple of cycles ago. But as I said, more importantly, he is a true friend of small business. Steve Forbes, welcome back to the show. Are you there?
I am indeed.
There you are.
thank you very much for those very kind words.
Well, all well deserved. But the one that I'm the most proud of, Steve, is to be able to say that you're a friend, and that means a lot to me, and I know it means a lot to my audience to know that when they hear you talk about things in the marketplace, that you're thinking of small business owners too.
Well, that's right. As you know better than anyone else, Jim, small business is the backbone of the economy, the biggest job provider, biggest source of innovation, gives this economy the flexibility that is the envy of the world.
Well, well said, Stephen. You know, back in the 20th century, the end of the 20th century, I looked into my little foggy crystal ball, and I saw something that I believed was going to happen, just based on the things that I was seeing around me. One of the big things is the democratization of technology and technological capability. And I predicted in 1998 that the 21st century was going to be the century of the entrepreneur, that the 20th century was the century of the major corporation, but the 20th century was going to be the century of the entrepreneur. And everything I see every day makes me believe that more and more.
Well, you see it all the time. Even companies that are now large were but a twinkle of the eye. And when you made your observation in 1998, the classic case being Google.
Yep.
When Google started, they were 10 of the search engines. I remember a venture capitalist once told me, Jim, that he never would have put money into Google when it started, because after all, there were a number of other search engines out there. This is how you get bubbles, because everyone jumps in the puddle at the same time. But, you know, they all say they'll do it better, but Google did do it better, did move forward. And that's the thing with small business. People have ideas. A lot of them don't succeed, but they have the opportunity to pursue those ideas, and that's how we all benefit.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things that Steve Wittenborn with IBM and I were just talking about that I think is an example of why I think more and more this is the century of the entrepreneur, and that is the partnering that small business is doing with big business. We no longer see them as big, intimidating customers or even the mean competition that's going to hurt us. We see them more and more as partners, don't we?
We do, and large companies, as you know, are outsourcing more and more, looking for small businesses with specialized skills and capabilities that can apply their skills to certain jobs better than a large corporation could.
Well, and that's an excellent point. And what you just said is an example of why I say that when small business owners complain about outsourcing, they don't realize that outsourcing is the best thing that ever happened to small business, isn't it?
In a true way, it is, because it means that a big company, is now recognizing it can't do everything, that it can only have an expertise in a certain focused area. And therefore, a lot of ancillary jobs, a lot of ancillary supplies and parts, skills can be outsourced. It doesn't mean it all goes overseas. There are a lot of domestic companies that are doing extremely well.
Well, absolutely. And of course, a lot of times we complain about globalization, but globalization is the trade manifestation of our intellect, as is outsourcing. It's realizing that if other people can do things that we need that are not our core competencies, let's let them do that. And if it just so happens that those things, that those people are somewhere else on the planet, there's nothing wrong with that. And we're gonna jump over that and I want to come back to that issue a little bit later in the show. We're gonna take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, I'm gonna ask Steve Forbes to help us take a look at what President Bush and the Republican majority in Congress are going to be trying to accomplish over the next 4 years, especially as it relates to you and me as small business owners. And I don't know anybody in the world who can do that better than Steve Forbes. We're going to do that right after these messages. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. It's 20 till.
Do you say the same words to someone else when I'm not there?
Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind. Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, celebrating 7 years on the air, actually into our 8th year now. Couldn't have done it without you. Couldn't have done it without our good friends, like our good friend Steve Forbes. Many of you know, those of you who have my book, know that Steve wrote the foreword to my first book, Small Business is Like a Bunch of Bananas. And Steve, that was an important thing for you to do for me, and I appreciate that.
Well, it was a pleasure to do it. You're the guru in this area.
Steve, let's talk about this is the first time you've been on since President Bush won re-election, and since maybe the numbers that George Bush got as a president, certainly he certainly got a clear majority, a popular vote. He won handily in the Electoral College. But if there is any argument for him to have a mandate, it's got to be in what happened in the senatorial and the House of Representatives election, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, and I think that the gain of those critical Senate seats, especially the defeat of Tom Daschle of South Dakota,
yep,
I think indicated people were not impressed by obstructionism, that they want some positive things done. But we must never underestimate, Jim, how difficult it is, and I think the president knows this, to overcome the permanent political culture in Washington, D.C. You see it in reaction to his idea of fundamentally overhauling the tax code.
Mm-hmm.
Senator the other day from his own party said, we don't want to tilt at windmills. I mean, they just get stuck in their ways.
And that's not really, as you pointed out, that's not really Republican or Democrat. It's the Washington culture, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, the people seem to imbibe the vapors, and strange things happen to them.
Well, one of the things that you promoted heavily, I think, in your campaign for president was the flat tax. Now, when I look at some of the things that President Bush is probably going to work on, one of them is going to be something to do with the income tax, making the tax cuts permanent, and hopefully maybe overhauling, redoing the income tax code, also privatizing Social Security and a couple of others that we'll talk about in a minute. But what are your thoughts on what you think he'll accomplish with regard to the income tax?
Well, on the income tax, I think there are two schools of thought inside the administration. One is those who believe that you just have to take this 9-million-word code and just junk it and start all over again. And the other school is what you might call, Jim, the 1986 school. As you know, in 1986, there was a tax bill.
Yep.
A lot of tax shelters were done away with. Income tax brackets were reduced to two, one at 15%, one at 28%. Good bill. But no sooner was the ink dry than rates started to go up, brackets started to expand, new credits amendments were put into the code, and we have the monstrosity we have today. So I hope they realize that if you don't kill the beast is going to come back and devour you.
That's exactly right. I'm of the camp that let's scrap the whole thing and start over again and make it simpler. And I know,
right.
I believe that's where you are.
Absolutely.
But that's a windmill. Now, I'm not saying that tilting at a windmill sounds like As you mentioned, that sounds like, you know, a lost cause, but it is that scrapping the whole code. I mean, those tentacles have gotten pretty far into our not only government but into the society.
Well, that's right. Hardly anything you do now isn't there's can't do anything without being impacted by it.
Right.
And so I think when what people should do one exercise in the morning is get up and make yourself recognize all the taxes you pay. When you get up and turn on the electricity, that's the electricity tax. You turn on the water, you're paying the water tax. You start your car, you're paying a lot of various gasoline taxes. You use your cell phone, you've got a lot of telephone taxes. Mm-hmm. You drive on the highway, you have tolls. So everything you do now is hit, and it hits you in so many small ways you don't realize what a big burden you end up hauling.
But if we're going to get tax simplification, we've got to find the one thing that is the most dramatic, and try to focus on that one thing. Don't you think? Like income tax.
Yes, I think there needs to be a symbol, and whether it's just a crazy passage from the tax code that is gibberish. You know, if you file a short form, supposedly the easy form,
right,
130-page booklet to tell you how to fill it out.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, that's exactly right. Steve, what about...
In short, Jim, the whole game is they tax you a dollar, give you back 50 cents in various forms of deductions and credits and exemptions and that sort of thing.
Right.
And the bottom line is, wouldn't it just be simpler just to tax us the 50 cents instead of going through all this rigmarole?
Well, it would be, except that then they don't get credit for giving us back our own money, though. That's the problem, isn't it?
That's right. They take our money and then use it to buy our vote.
Exactly. And unfortunately, sometimes we actually act grateful for that, don't we?
We do indeed. And perhaps we should, since they have no intention of ever returning the money unless they think it's a necessity to get reelected.
Right. Do you think that there will be true reform before George Bush is out of office?
I think so. And I think if the president makes it a priority, which it looks like he is, and makes the case to the public, I think the public will rally to his side. And I think that's the only way we're going to overcome this entrenched Washington Beltway culture.
Right, right. Well said, Steve Forbes. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Steve Forbes is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget his website is Forbes.com. And as you know, his outstanding publication, the Forbes magazine, is available wherever publications are sold. And you can also subscribe, I happen to know this, on their website. Tintil, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back.
Give you my dog surprise.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Steve Forbes is our guest, our good friend, and a great friend of small business, ladies and gentlemen. As you know, as I know you've seen him on television, on Fox on Forbes. That's a great show, by the way, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Forbes on Fox, I should say. But I really enjoy that on Saturdays.
Thank you. Well, we have good fun putting it together, and as you well know, we don't hesitate to battle one another.
Exactly, yes. A bunch of your own folks. I love the guy out in San Francisco. What's his name?
Quentin Hardy.
Yeah. He's got a lot of courage and a lot of grit. I don't agree with what he says, but I like his grit. Steve, one of the things I wanted to talk about before we go, there's so many things to talk about. Next time you come back, I want to talk about privatizing Social Security, because that's a big thing, too. But before I want to change subjects a little bit. In your book, A New Birth of Freedom, which, by the way, folks, I recommend to you, you talk about, in Chapter 3, you talk about the magic of a free society. And you were talking in that book about America, the free society in America, how magical it is. But aren't we seeing this magic take root around the world now, free societies?
It is starting to take root, and it makes us realize what you need to make those things come to pass. For example, we take for granted in America, Jim, that if you buy a house, say in Chicago, You can go to a bank in New Mexico or California and get financing for it. Mm-hmm. Everyone recognizes that we own the thing. But that kind of property rights system is not prevalent in the world. So it's hard to get a mortgage. You have different property rights systems even within a country. So you have large informal economies. A lot of people aren't, they don't have addresses in effect because of, their business, their home may be illegal. So there are a lot of institutions that we have in our free society that make it possible for the magic of a free society to work, and we've got to promote that overseas.
Well, and thank God the last superpower is the United States, which has a desire to do what you just said. And isn't that a responsibility that we have that goes along with all the blessings that we have here in America? Isn't it our responsibility, our place in history, our destiny, so to speak, to deliver this magic to other people and not to tell them how their magic should look, but to help have them, to let them have access to their kind of magic of a free society?
Well, that's right, and you're right. In most cases, we're not going to impose it, other than after a war, such as the Second World War, or now after the Gulf War. But I think that we are, Ronald Reagan loved to make a reference to the shining city on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't take the lead, the bad people are going to win. We have a, you're right, we have that special destiny. It falls on our shoulders, and it's not a light burden. But if we don't do it, no one else will.
There's nobody in the world in a position to do what we've done. And, you know, Steve, one of the things that I've tried to point out to folks is, yes, mistakes have been made by this administration. And, yes, more mistakes will be made. And if Kerry had gotten elected, he would make mistakes. But fundamentally, though, America cannot turn its back on this opportunity to deliver the magic of free societies to people who want it. And I think the people of Iraq want that. I think the people of China want that. I know there are a bunch of people in Iran who want to be free.
That's right. That's what the mullahs in Iran absolutely fear, is that this growing opposition in Iran is going to do to them what they did to the Shah 25 years ago.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Steve, we've got about a minute, and I don't want to end our visit without giving you an opportunity to think about 2005 and think about our small business owners out there, our heroes, and for you to talk, give them a couple of last thoughts on what you think we ought to be thinking about for 2005.
Well, obviously, we have to worry about the war on terror, but I think, Jim, I think it should be a decent year for the economy. The thing to watch out for is interest rates. The Federal Reserve has been printing a little too much money recently, which is why the gold price is over $430 an ounce, why we had trouble with oil for a while, steel prices for a while. And so I hope the Fed doesn't have to raise interest rates a lot, but just pulls in the money creation a little bit, so we get over this mild inflationary cold and prevent it from turning into a bout of pneumonia.
Well, I think that not only they're prepared to do that, but I think the marketplace is structured better to allow what you just said to happen. Don't you think so?
That's right. That if they're doing the wrong thing, the signals are going to be coming back pretty quick.
Right. Steve Forbes, thank you for being here. Thank you for your friendship and for all you do for small businesses.
Thank you, Jim. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Steve Forbes, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I will be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.